Thanks, Mark. And do you have the pointer? Okay. So I'm here today to share a little bit about my experience in genomic evaluation. And genomics right now is very popular, so we see genomics everywhere. But what is genomics? So genomics is the science behind the genome or behind the genetic information of individuals. And the genetic information of an individual is stored in the DNA as four different letters, A, C, T, and G. And if we look at the bovine genome, those letters, they are repeated about 3 billion times. But sometimes errors can occur, and those errors are like typos. So just to understand what I'm talking about, if we think here, in this very position in the DNA, we expect to see the letter G, but then we see the letter T. So this is what we call single nucleotide polymorphism, or SNPs. And in animal breeding, we are interested on those SNPs. So actually, we genotype the animals so we can put the hands on these SNPs. And I swear that I'm here today to talk about genomics. And I'm passionate about genomics, about genetics, about animal breeding. But I'm also passionate about cars and trucks. So I want to talk a little bit about trucks. So let's imagine this situation. You have a very nice truck that works really well. This truck takes you everywhere, and you are very happy with that. But in order for this truck to work, we need to put some fuel that can be diesel or gasoline. And we also need some engine oil. So if we put diesel and engine oil, this truck will work really well. But let's say someone comes to you and say that, oh, right now we have a very nice additive that can make your truck more efficient. So this can make your truck faster, so you are going to get to reach your destination faster. And overall, this additive would improve the performance of your truck. So by knowing everything, would you try this additive? I would try this additive if it's going to improve the performance of my truck. So maybe some of you are not understanding this story, but I can translate this into the genomic evaluation or genetic evaluation scenario. So we can replace our truck by our blood mixed model equation. And some of you may know that the blood mixed model equation is actually the core of the genetic evaluation. But in order for blood to work, we need to put some data set. We need to put phenotypes. So the phenotypes here are represented by Y. And in order for this blood to work, we also need to put some pedigrees. And the pedigree is represented here by the A matrix. The A is a matrix that contains the relationships among animals, and this is what we call expected relationships. So can we replace our additive by something? Yeah, we can replace this by the genomic information. So the genomic information will add accuracy to our evaluation, will improve the performance of our evaluation. And when we include genomic information in our blood mixed model equation, we have what we call single-step GBLUB. And if you pay attention here, we replace the A matrix by a matrix that we call age. And what is this age matrix? So this age matrix contains observed or realized relationships among individuals. And then this matrix is composed by our pedigree relationship matrix represented by A, also our genomic relationship matrix represented by G. So the genomic relationship matrix contains the allele sharing among genotyped individuals. And we also account for the pedigree relationships among genotyped animals that here we call A22. So while in A, we have a punctual relationship, so if the animal, if we have two animals that are full sibs, we expect that they share 50% of the DNA. But if we look at age and G, we have a distribution. So just to make the things easier, let's say we have two calves that were born from the same sire and the same dam. So they are full sibs. We expect that they share 50% of their DNA. But let's say we genotype those two animals and for the 50K SNP chip, so we are looking at 50,000 positions of the DNA, and it turned out that actually the animals, they share 60% of the 50,000 SNPs. So just by having this correction in the relationships, we can have extra accuracy in our evaluations. So here is a nice representation of the single step GBLUB. So as the name says, for this method, we just need one unique step in order to put the hands on genomic breeding values or genomic enhanced EPDs. So GEBVs are roughly two times the genomic enhanced EPDs. But in order for a single step to work, so we need pedigrees, phenotypes, and genotypes, here represented by SNPs. And besides single step, we also have another method for genomic evaluation that's called multi-step. So for the multi-step, as the name says, we need to go through several steps in order to put the hands on GEBVs or genomic enhanced EPDs. So the first step is to combine pedigrees and phenotypes in the traditional blood. And after doing that, we will have access to EBVs. So estimated breeding values. And then after having EBVs, we do some calculations that we call deregression. So we will have deregressed EBVs, and we combine the deregressed EBVs with our genomic information. And by doing that, we will have access to the molecular breeding values, or MBVs. And with the MBVs, we can consider them as a correlated trait with the trait phenotype. And the result is the GEBVs, or genomic enhanced EPDs. And we can also have access to the accuracy of molecular breeding values through correlations, genetic correlations. And here are the basic differences between single step and multi-step. So for a single step, we use the same models as we use in traditional evaluations. But for multi-step, we need to use simple models. And for a single step, we use rough phenotypes, so the phenotypes just as they were collected. And for multi-step, we need to use some sort of pseudo-phenotypes, like deregressed breeding values. And for a single step, it does not matter if the animal is genotyped or not, so we can include all animals in the evaluation. But for multi-step, we just consider the genotyped animals. And actually, multi-step is the method that the beef cattle associations are using to estimate genomic breeding values. And in 2009, the American Angus Association was the pioneer in implementing this multi-step method for genomic evaluation. And right now, the American Angus Association is also pioneer because they will be the first beef cattle association to implement the single-step GBLUB. And it's clear that in the Angus Association, not all animals are genotyped. So among the over 8 million animals that are registered, I think about 10 million animals, how many are genotyped? So in July 2014, we received the first data to try the single step. And by that time, the American Angus Association had 82,000 genotyped animals. And here we have the distribution of the genotyped animals over year of birth. And we can see here that most of the genotyped animals, they were born from 2012. Actually, 70% of the genotyped animals were born from 2012. And we also investigated the composition of this population, this genotyped population. And we saw that about 1,700 bulls, they had high EBV accuracy. And the EBV accuracy was higher than 0.85. So this is the regular accuracy. It's not in the BIF scale. If we transform that in the BIF scale, it will be about 0.46. And in this data set, we also had about 300 cows that had accuracies, EBV accuracies, higher than 0.85. We had about 31,000 animals that had accuracy lower than 0.85. We had 18,000 animals that could be in our validation population, so validation population in the population used to test the genomic predictions. And we had about 30,000 genotyped animals without phenotypes at all. So here we realized that those animals, the 1,700 bulls, 3,000 cows, and 31,000 other animals with accuracy lower than 0.85 would be the animals that we could put in the reference population, the population that can give information to the evaluation. And when we talk about reference and validation population, we know two things already. One thing that we know is that if we increase the size of the reference population, the prediction accuracy will increase. And another thing that we know is that if the relationship between validation and reference population is very strong, we will have higher accuracy of genomic predictions. And what about the composition of the reference population? What do we know about that? Well, if we know how the animals can contribute, or which animals, if we genotype, how they could contribute to the evaluations, it would be easier to have a genotyping strategy. So it would be easier to genotype the animals, to choose the animals to genotype. So we decided to check which animals were contributing to the evaluation. And for in order to do that, we split the reference population in three. We tested three reference populations. The first one had the 1,700 top bulls with accuracy higher than 0.85. The second one had the top bulls and top cows. And the third one had top bulls, top cows, and the extra 31,000 genotyped animals with accuracies lower than 0.85. And then the validation was done in 18,000 genotyped animals. So for the validation, we checked the ability to predict the future phenotypes for those genotyped animals that were treated as young. And how do we treat an animal as young? We just remove the phenotypes. So we remove the phenotypes, and then we run traditional blood and also single-step G-blood. And after doing that, we had access to EBVs and to GEBVs. And after that, we just correlated EBVs and GEBVs with the true phenotypes of the animals corrected for fixed effects. So for this evaluation, actually, we did two evaluations. The first one was for growth traits. So we used the three-trait model with maternal effect, with permanent environmental maternal, and this we used birth weight, weaning weight, and post-weaning gain. And the second evaluation was for calving ease, and we used two-trait model with calving ease and also birth weight. Excuse me. And then here, what I want to show you first is the ability to predict the future phenotypes for the 18,000 young genotyped animals. And this first graph is for birth weight. So here in the x-axis, we have first blood, so no genomic information, and the predictivity was 0.29. And when we added genomic information for the top bulls, predictivity increased by 5 points. And here, when we added genomic information for the top cows, predictivity didn't change. And when we added genomic information for the extra 31,000 genotyped animals, the predictivity increased by 5 points if we compare when we use just top bulls. So which means that the predictivity given by the top bulls is the same predictivity as given by 31,000 extra bulls. And the second graph is for a weaning weight. And when we add the genomic information for the top bulls, predictivity increased by 1 point. By adding genotypes for cows, it did not change. And when we use genotypes, we include genotypes for the 31,000 extra animals, predictivity increased by 3 points. The next graph excuse me, is for post-winning gain. And when we add the genomic information for top bulls, predictivity increased by 4 points compared to blood. Adding genomic information for the top cows did not change anything. And when we add the genomic information for the extra 31,000, predictivity increased by 2 points. And the last graph I want to show you is for calving ease. So for calving ease, when we add the genomic information for the top bulls, predictivity increased by 1 point, and after that, it did not increase. And why is that? This is possibly because the herdability for calving ease is very low compared to the other traits, and also because in Angus, the incidence of difficult calving is very low, especially among genotyped animals. And we can see here that for the majority of the traits, the top bulls were the ones that gave more information to the evaluation. So with that, we can say that besides genotyping lots of young animals, it's very important to genotype animals that have lots of links to the population, animals that can give information in the population. And right now, I think it's not a big deal to add genotypes. It's not a big problem because genotyping is getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And because of that, some associations or some breeds, they are genotyping lots of animals, and the number of genotyped animals is increasing very fast. And if we look here, as of July 2014, so as I told you before, Angus had 82,000 genotyped animals. January 2015, 110. And June 2015, 130. So it's about 50,000 extra animals in less than 1 year. And this is very good. This increase is very good. And this means that the Angus is doing the homework. But what about the other associations or the other breeds? Are they also doing the homework? If you look at fish, let's look at fish. USDA has right now genotypes for 2,500 rainbow trout. And there is a big company that we work with, and they have about 15,000 genotyped animals. A chicken company that we also work with has about 18,000 genotyped animals. American Angus Association, 130,000. And U.S. hosting population, 850,000. It's very big. And if you remember, earlier in my presentation, I showed you how to construct age. And I told you that we need G and A to 2. But actually, what we need is G inverse. This minus 1 here indicates that it's the inverse of the matrix. And we also need A to 2 inverse. And the computing cost to invert a matrix is very huge. So, which means that we can do the regular inversion of a matrix just for a limited set of animals. So, can we do that for fish? Yes, we can do. And it's very easy, very fast. We can do that for fish. Can we do that for pigs? Yes, we can do for pigs as well. For chicken? Yes, we can do for chicken. Very fast. What about for American Angus? Can we do that with regular inversion? Yes, we can do that. It takes a little bit longer. We need a bigger computer, and it may take a couple of hours to construct G and A to 2 and to invert those matrices, but we can do that. What about for U.S. hosting? It's almost impossible. We cannot do that for U.S. hosting. So it's almost impossible to invert a matrix that has dimension of 850,000. So with that, we could see that the regular inversion has a limitation on about 150,000 genotyped animals. So I told you that we need to invert G and we need to invert A to 2. What about this A here, the pedigree-based relationship matrix? Actually, in 1976, Henderson, he came up with a very efficient method to construct the A inverse. And this method turned some lights on for us. So, and I need to tell you a secret. We found ways to overcome the limitation of the number of genotyped animals. So we don't have this limitation anymore. And if you see somewhere that the single step has a limitation on the number of genotyped animals, you know that this does not hold anymore. So one way that we found to overcome this limitation is by splitting the genotyped population into base and non-base animals. So the base animals actually are the ones that will give information to the evaluation. So after splitting the genotyped population in base and non-base, we use a recursive method that is based on the Henderson's method to invert or to construct the A inverse. And so we call this method genomic recursion. And I'm not show equations here, but I want to show you how the G inverted by genomic recursions look like. So here, this dark blue part contains relationships among base animals. And this is the only part of the matrix that we need to invert. So instead of inverting the whole matrix, we just invert this small part here. And then all other coefficients in this matrix are obtained through recursions, the genomic recursion. And then here in this light blue part, we have relationships between base and non-base animals. And here in this big white part, actually this is a diagonal matrix, which means that we ignore relationships among non-base animals. So our group at UGA has been working on this method since January 2014. And we had a question. So which animals, or how, and also how many animals we should put here in this base part. And this number could be enough to give higher accuracy or high accuracy, and it should not increase computing costs. So we decided to test that for the two biggest populations we have, the American Angus and the U.S. Holstein. And then here I want to show you results first for winning weight in the American Angus population. So what we have here in the y-axis actually is correlation between GEBVs obtained through single step when we use it regular inversion, and GEBVs with single step when we use it the genomic recursion. And here is the definition of base animals, and these the animals were selected to be in the base population according to the accuracies. So first we had 2,000, and then 4,000, 8,000, 10,000, 20,000, and 33,000 animals in that dark blue part. And we can see here that as we increased the number of animals in the base population, the correlation increased, and it reached, it got very close to 1. When we use it about 8,000 genotyped animals in the base population. So this means that this method is working pretty good. It's working well. And for this population, using about 8,000 or 10,000 animals in that dark blue part as base population is enough. But what about for the U.S. Holstein population? Well, for the U.S. Holstein, we tested in the evaluation for final score. And here in the y-axis, we have correlation, again, between GEBVs obtained through single step using regular inversion and GEBVs with single step using the genomic recursion. And here, the definition of base animals was a little bit different because we randomly sampled the animals. So we randomly sampled 2,000, 5,000, 10,000, 15,000, and 20,000. And we could also see that as we increased the number of animals in the base population, correlations got close to 1, especially when we used 10,000 animals as base population. So we believe that for cattle population, that the ideal number of animals to put here to consider as base population is somewhere between 10,000 and 15,000. And this is possibly because this number is related to the independent chromosome segments or independent SNPs that we have for the evaluation. And in those two analyses, we also figure out that it does not matter which animals we consider as base and non-base. Actually, what matters is the number of animals that we put over there. So this is just one of the methods. The second method is what we call indirect predictions for young animals. Yeah. It's just a method that updates the solution that you had before. You just update. Yeah. So the second method is called indirect predictions for young animals. And then if we take the graph with the distribution of genotyped animals back, we can see here, it's very small, probably you cannot see, but about 30,000 animals are young animals, so they have genotypes, but they don't have phenotypes. So if we could find a way, so this method was basically invented created because we tried to find a way to get genomic predictions for the young animals without including them in a new run of evaluation. So if we do not include those young animals in a new run of evaluation, the evaluation will run faster. This is because the dimension of G is smaller. So just to understand how the indirect predictions work, first we need to know what is direct prediction. So when we run single step with all pedigrees, all phenotypes, and all genotypes, we have what we call direct predictions. So we are putting everything together, and the final result is GEBV. And when we do that, actually, our GEBV, our genomic estimated breeding value, is composed by parent average, so the average of EBVs from parents, represented by PA. And they are also composed by yield deviation, YD here, so this comes from phenotypes. And we also have a component here that's the progeny contribution, or PC, that comes from progeny, if the animal has progeny. We have also DGVs, or direct genomic values, and this is correspondent to molecular breeding values. And we also have pedigree prediction. And just to make the things easier here, we can do some correspondence. So parent average comes from A, direct genomic value comes from G, and pedigree predictions comes from A to 2. And when we have indirect predictions, we use all pedigrees, all phenotypes, but we use genotypes just for a reference set of animals. So we do not use genotypes for young animals. And when we do that, we have GBVs, but the GBVs are not for the young animals. So after getting GBVs, we can translate GBVs into SNP effects. And the SNP effect can be calculated, actually it's calculated based on the blood theory. So we can use GEBVs, but then we observe that for this population we have animals with different levels of accuracy. So for this population, the best thing was to put the hands just on the genomic part, or the GEBVs, and calculate SNP effects based on DGVs. And then after doing that, we can calculate DGVs, direct genomic values, or molecular breeding values for the young animals just by multiplying Z, a matrix with SNP content, by a vector of SNP effects U. And after getting DGVs, we can combine DGVs with parent average, average from parents, and then we can have an approximated GBV. And why this is approximated? Well, if we look here, for direct predictions, GBV is composed by all those components. But for young animals, actually, young animals, they don't have phenotypes, so this term here is vanished. They don't have progeny, so this term is also vanished. So the only difference between GBVs with indirect predictions and GEBVs with direct prediction is the pedigree prediction here. So just one term. So just to put the things in an easier way, so for indirect predictions, the dimension of G is based on the number of animals in the reference population. And in this case, we tested a reference population with 2,000 animals, 8,000 and 33,000. So when we have direct predictions, the dimension of G is based on the number of animals in the reference population and the animals in the validation population. That here is big, so which means that the computations for direct predictions are more costly than when we have indirect predictions. And here what I want to show you is the ability to predict future phenotypes for the young genotyped animals, the 18,000. And here is for post-weaning gain, when we used first the 2,000 animals in the reference. And here in the x-axis we have parent average, so predictivity for parent average was 0.23. And for DGVs obtained through indirect predictions was 0.19, so it was smaller. And when we combine parent average with DGV, here I put G as GBV ind, predictivity increased. But still, for this case, the highest predictivity was when we used single step with direct predictions. Here I indicate it as GEBV DIR. So the second graph here is when we use the reference population of 8,000 genotyped animals. So for DGV obtained through indirect predictions, predictivity was 0.24, so it was higher than for parent average. And when we combine with parent average, it was a little bit higher, but still the greatest predictivity was when we used single step with everybody together, everything together, as direct prediction. But when we use the reference population of 33,000 genotyped animals, the predictivity for DGV through indirect prediction was the same as the predictivity when we blend, when we combine DGV with parent average. Which means that when we have a big reference population, probably we don't need to combine DGV with parent average. And another thing we observed here is that predictivity for DGV using indirect prediction was the same as for GBVs using direct prediction. So this means that this method is working really well, and we can have accuracies for indirect prediction as high as when we have direct prediction. So just to put everything together here, so the single step is just a blob that was modified in order to account for genomic information. And this genomic information actually is used to improve the performance of the method. And right now, we can say that this method is very easy to implement because it just requires a modification in the relationship matrix. And we've been working on this method for about 7 years. And right now, this method is ready for use, and we can use if we have a small number of genotypes or very big number of genotyped animals. And this method is also very flexible because it allows us to get interim evaluations for young genotyped animals. And maybe the most important here is that this method is suitable for genetic or genomic evaluations in beef cattle. So with that, I would like to acknowledge American Angus Association, Angus Genetics, NIFA USDA, Zoetis, the University of Georgia, and some colleagues that helped with this project. And I would be happy to take any questions.